But good morning, Jamasiki. That means praise the Lord. In where I was in North India, normally people greet each other with namaste, which means hello, but actually literally it means I recognize the divine in you. But it's become a secular greeting as well. So namaste, but the Christians in North India teach their children to say instead, Jamasiki. And so it's a blessing to hear all these little kids come running up saying, Jamasiki, Jamasiki. So praise the Lord, praise the Lord. And okay, we're going to talk about the recent trip to India. I've just been back a week. I got back last Sunday night, and Dave had asked me to give a report on it and a message from the Word, and I'm afraid this will be more report than message, but the two will come together in the end, as you see. And I don't know why it is, but I always seem to schedule a visit to Tequila right after I've been coming home from India. So, it's going to work. So, this is my fifth trip to India, and it humbles me to think that God would open a ministry up like this for me in my later years. I have been so blessed with His goodness. Now, I've had India on my mind for 45 years now, as I was talking with Dave earlier, and I never really expected that I would even get to go once, much less now have a repeat ministry. And I've been, I was saying in Sunday school this morning, this is my third trip in 9 months. So I've been shuttling back and forth, it seems, and flew out of here to Seattle, Seattle to Amsterdam. Amsterdam said hello, Trudy. So I didn't get to spend long enough there. And my preparations for this trip have been very long, very complicated, but very interesting. And that included, of course, fundraising and scheduling 12 different flights, studying, preparing to teach two courses. I've taught 1 Corinthians and Revelation this time, and along I had to prepare quizzes, I had to prepare paper assignments, student notes, and all of my teaching is done through a translator, which means I have really, in the previous two times, run into some very complicated situations with what kind of quiz questions I can ask. You can't ask for quotes, because they're in a different language. You can't ask for fill in a blank, because their syntax is entirely different, and their words may not be what I'm looking for. And so on this third trip, I think I finally got it. Went from there, flew from Amsterdam to Delhi, and we used to fly across through Russia, but that route has changed now, and I'm not sure if it's politics or what. And as always, when you're traveling, you never know who you're going to sit next to. And I am not a bold evangelist, but I'm always looking for God to give me opportunities to share my faith. Well, on the flight from Seattle to Amsterdam, my neighbor was a young Dutch woman. She was about 6-something feet tall, and it was interesting her trying to fold into that seat. It was kind of all arms and legs, but she was finishing her master's degree in journalism. And when I mentioned that I was a minister, she asked, "What's that?" She didn't know. And so I told her, "Well, I'm a Christian pastor." Well, then she asked me, she said she had never been around Christians, didn't know anything about them, and she basically asked me, "Well, how do you and your God communicate?" She didn't use the word "your," but it was front and present. And so I explained to her, you know, how God interacts with His people and works with them. And as I began to explain it, I saw that here was an opportunity to present the gospel to this young woman, and so I did. I managed to share my testimony. I brought out all the major elements of the gospel as I went along, and that was with a quick Nehemiah prayer, you know, "Lord, you know, open up her heart here." And she was attentive, she was respectful, she thanked me for it at the end. I came away with the feeling that it was a journalistic interest rather than a spiritual one, but nonetheless, she's heard the gospel now. And someday, hopefully, I would love to pray that she will stand before the Lord in bowed knee as her Savior and not be condemned by it. But I arrived in Delhi early in the morning, and I caught 2 flights down to the southern state of Tamil Nadu. This is a map of India. Tamil Nadu is way down here. I explained in Sunday school that I have a Facebook granddaughter and her family way down there. And then, see if my little light is working here. Aha! So I was down around here, and then later on, when I went to teach, I was clear up here in Uttarakhand, teaching up against the foothills of the Himalayas. Two completely different parts of the country. But I got down there, was greeted by the family that I met when I was over in September, and just a wonderful family. This is a leaving picture as I was leaving there in September. They honored me with this man skirt. It has a name, and I forgot it this morning. That's what people wear down there, though that's a fancy one, because it was so hot. But there's granddaughter up here, and there's her sister. Her brother-in-law is taking the picture. That's her brother, Sam. Here's her mother, her father, and one of her nieces. And granddaughter is engaged. And that is an answered prayer for us. It's an arranged marriage. She's talked to the young man yet. She has seen him at a family meeting. It's all ritual. One family visits the other back and forth. But nowadays, kids have a way around all of that. As soon as she met him, she got on Facebook and found his page. So they still haven't been communicating, but we're excited for them. She's 25 years old, and we were concerned because at 26, basically a young woman in India is considered an old maid. And life is brutal if you're not married in India. So, and I'll say more about that in just a minute. But that first evening down there, I had two partial and two full wonderful days with them. This is my second trip down there. And we went to a meeting that evening, and it was mostly women, young and old, gathered around on the floor in the little living room there. And they were a very happy, laughing group of people. I'm going to move a little bit out of the way here so that I'm not there. And even though I don't speak Tamil, I very much enjoyed listening to them. And Angel's brother, Sam, was doing most of the translating for me, what was being said. But they sang several songs, and then I was asked to share from the Word. And, of course, I've said it before here, how do I want to put this? Always be prepared to preach, pray, or pass away. So, passing away is the ideal part, of course, but otherwise, sometimes you better know what you're going to preach right on the spot. And so, I asked the Lord for direction and chose to talk on heaven from Revelation 21, 1 to 7, and I could tell they were with me all the way. It was really resonating with them. And my aim was to encourage them, and I did just that. Afterwards, we went to a nearby house for dinner. And just the humble and the pleasant way these people show honor to others is really, really blesses my heart. The women, of course, do all the cooking and serving. I had preached some years earlier. I had preached on heaven in Nagpur in central India. And I talked about heaven, mostly what we know about it is what isn't going to be there, all the bad stuff, all the evil, all the sin. And afterwards, a lady came to me and she said, well, we've been talking about it, and we decided that in heaven the women won't have to cook. So... So, I hope that's true for their sake. In any event, over there we eat, of course, you know, with the fingers of the right hand. And, of course, they get dirty up to the knuckle. Well, then the women will pour water over your hands. And I was reminded of, I believe, Elisha pouring water for Elijah. Very different culture than ours. I do have to stick a little bit of a story in here. You know, I was operating on a budget. I had my personal money, and I had the money that I had raised for the ministry, and I was keeping careful tabs of everything. That first night, I sat down, and I was sorting things out, and I was missing $800. And I went through everything and tried to think of everything, was praying about it, and I just finally realized that the money was probably sitting in an envelope on my desk at home marked India. So the next day I was in the middle of preparing something for class, and out of nowhere this little thought just gently crept into my mind, you're wearing a money belt. I'd never worn one before, so I forgot. I had 8 $100 bills tucked around in my belt. Oh, well. I love it when the Lord brings these little things in like that. It just it makes the trip so much more interesting. And it was funny, the next morning, Angel's parents showed up. They had moved over to the little church just about a quarter mile away to give me their house to stay in. I mean, that meant they were sleeping on cots in the church while I was sleeping on the parents' bed in the house. Very primitive house. And her parents showed up, and I was getting ready for a shower. And so they trotted me out to the outhouse. It was a family affair. And Dad and I stood outside there while, Mom was inside swashing everything down. And by the way, that's an Indian toilet, which is just a ceramic toilet set in the ground. And anyway, she made sure it was all clean and everything. So then I went in to take my bucket bath. Angel had heated some water up in a bucket for me. They take cold baths. Oh, it's cold. And I'm from Alaska, too. But then I hung my towel and my clothes over the door, so all the neighborhood could know that I was in there showering. It's sort of a communal thing over there, but at least a public event. And interesting, just cultural things. Before I went in there, Angel, my granddaughter, asked if I had any shower liquid, and they call it a shower even though it's a bucket bath. And I showed her my toilet kit, and I had brought along a bottle of laundry soap, liquid laundry soap for doing my laundry. And she looked at it. She asked what it was. She'd never heard of laundry soap before. She had no idea what it was for. They scrub with hand brushes in a bucket to clean all of their laundry in hot water. I have observed, even on the outskirts of a city, women down at the river doing their laundry on the rocks down there. This is India. It's a whole lot different than it is here. And so it really is brute labor, and that's a reality in India. And in fact, I took a couple pictures of Angel's mother. A young man was doing some concrete work for them in the patio in the little building next to the church, and her mother was carrying gravel for him in this. They don't know buckets and wheelbarrows over there, and she was picking up and carrying this gravel. Now, it would have looked a lot more convincingly brutal if she hadn't smiled for the camera, but I was just amazed at what she was doing. And of course, everything really there was done outside. Here she's washing dishes after a church dinner, and the church dinner primarily is rice and whatever sauces they can put on it and such. Sharpened her knives on the stone right behind you there. Just a lifestyle we're not used to with all of our luxuries and whatnot. And I was talking with her son-in-law later, Manasseh, who's a pastor, and he was telling me about a woman's status in India. The man always eats first, and the woman stands by to attend to him, and then she eats after he's all done. And I've seen that frequently even in Christian homes. The women will eat after the men. And it kind of goes against my grain as an American to see traditions like that. I guess I'm much too egalitarian, but speaking of women laboring, check this out. She is putting bricks up on that pile so that they can build it, carrying the baby at the same time. Those women must have phenomenally strong necks. So I caught that. I took that picture several years back, I think, in Lucknow in eastern India. And just phenomenal what they do over there. Anyway, while I was down there that afternoon, we drove to a city to do some shopping, and I began noticing anthills along the way. That is an anthill. It's draped with old saris to give it some color. King cobras, the largest venomous snake in the world, love to take up the residence in anthills, and they worship the cobras as gods. And so that is a temple to a god, full of ants and a king cobra. I've seen one of these in a small yard with the kids and the goats. And I thought, what idiot would want a king cobra in the yard with your kids and your goats? But that is part of India. Now, I've told you before, I think, a little bit about the ministry up in the mountain that Angel and her family have. And I told some in Sunday school, I'll repeat it again. If I run out of time, just go to sleep. Don't worry about me. Set up the food or whatever you have to. But Manasseh, Angel's brother, I'll show you a picture of him in a minute. Some years back, there are 42 Hindu villages up in this mountain chain, about an hour to the south of them. And he started walking up in there to learn the language, local language. There are something like somewhere between 12 and 1600 languages in India. And those spoke a different dialect up there, solidly Hindu. And he was going back and forth, just trying to get to know them, learn about them. Finally, one day, a man stopped him and said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, I've come to share the gospel with you. Do you know Jesus?" And the man said, "Nobody by that name in our village." Never been touched, never been reached. So they started bringing things in, reaching the children. They're having a vacation Bible school with the children now, doing social services for them, teaching them about Jesus. I understand there's going to be some baptism soon. It's an incredible ministry up there. They're reaching the kids and then hopefully going to reach the parents with the gospel as well. They're trying to get a clinic up in there. There are no medical facilities for any of the 42 villages. Women have died in childbirth during monsoon season because the narrow little road that was plowed in there get washed out. Can't even get washed out. It just fills up, period. But the day that I was there, the second day, that afternoon, we were going to go up and take candy to the kids. And there is Manasseh, the pastor, and there's a load of candy. And we went through most of it when we got up there. And we drove south about an hour, motorcycles, and then up the road into the village. We ran into some traffic on the way. You have to deal with traffic jams. And notice the painted horns on some of those cows. And that's the road, such as there is there. And we got up there, and there were about, let me see. First of all, here's the mountain, and they're up where it says tribal ministry in the middle there. That's a broad valley. There are seven villages in that valley, and the rest are scattered all through there. But we got up there, and there were a number of kids already gathered for us. We arrived second. That's granddaughter there on the left, and that's her brother-in-law Manasseh on the right. Hindu kids, beautiful young kids. I helped hand out candy, was in the midst of them, and they were sharing with them at the same time. Most of the girls were polite and said thank you. There is from the other angle. Now, some of them are wearing school uniforms. The government built a school and didn't give them a teacher, so they are supplying the teachers. And throughout India, you will see kids wearing school uniforms. I could not believe it in this day and age, but I was the first white man those children had ever seen. They had never seen a white man before. They've never been off the mountain. So there's the one. Yeah. I'm right back. When I first went to India with two other guys, I was cautioned, try not to look like a tourist. Try not to stand out. Here's a bazillion brown-colored people around and three white dudes standing there trying not to be conspicuous. But it was incredible. And the next morning, it was time for me to leave, and Sam and Angel came by and picked up my luggage and took it back to the church where we were going to leave from in the car. And I sat down against a wall there, just hunkered down against it. This was on a little street, and it's a Muslim street that they live on. This Christian pastor's family live on a Muslim street. And while I was there, this older man came over to me with a big smile and brought me a chair and gave it to me. He was just right across the street, and then his wife brought me coffee, and the kids showed up, and so I started taking some pictures. And these are little Muslim children from right across the street there, and took another picture there of some of them. And this is the street, just one car wide, and they've been picking tamarinds. It's their crop. And they had harvested them. Now they were spreading them out in the little street to dry. This is the family, the man and his wife there. And I'm amazed that the acceptedness, I guess, for lack of a better word, that these Muslims accept this Christian family at the end of the block with them, came over to show me that kindness. So very, 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 very wonderful there. These people are dependent on what little they can grow. And there's just not a whole lot of it there. Now, I said my goodbyes, and here is the pastor's wife, Jabba. And those are her two little girls. And a lot of what they do is sitting on the ground. But this little girl especially, she just liked to come up and take my hand, and we'd walk around, and she was just a delight to be with. So wonderful, wonderful people. And the following morning, they drove me to the airport in Salem, and a tiny little airport, and there we are waiting to fly away. And so just gathered for the goodbyes. My flights back to Delhi were fine. I really missed that family. I wish I could be back and spend more time with them. I've been able to preach in their church on a Sunday evening and share with different families around as well. But my flights back to Delhi went fine. I made it to my hotel in the city center just fine. I had hoped to meet with CB and his family for church the next morning, and one thing came to another, and I was so indecisive, and I wasn't sure quite if I wanted to try and get a taxi and how it was going to work, and I didn't. So I wound up shopping. But here are just a few street scenes in Delhi. You don't see as many beggars now. I saw less this time than I've seen before, but they're still there. And you want to basically stay clear of the beggars. If you give something to them, you do it carefully like that, because otherwise the kids will mob you. And I've been attacked by beggars in Connaught Place before, and it's not pleasant. So another street scene. This is a bicycle, also called a beast of burden. Yeah, taking his wares to wherever he's going to do something with them. And overstacking things is phenomenal in India. I just love getting pictures of things like that. This is dogs are everywhere. So I took a picture from the front, and then I took a picture from the side. He'd found him a nice, comfortable spot on this tiny little street. And it was just right down from my hotel. So didn't disturb his sleep at all. Let's see, what's next? This actually, I put this picture in here as a street scene, but then I got to looking at it, and the script is in Tamil, so this would have been back down in the south, not in Delhi. But this is the garbage and the stuff everywhere is typical. That's India. You will see the finest palatial homes, and right next to them, something falling apart and the garbage everywhere. That's India. This, again, is also down south. And, of course, the women's saris. Those are the most colorful women's clothes in the world, I think. But, another one there. And, of course, street lines, when they have lines painted on the streets, it's for the amusement of tourists. It bears no relationship to how many lanes of vehicles you can have across there. And so motorcycles cram in everywhere. 20 years ago, it was a bazillion bicycles. Now it's a bazillion motorcycles. And the smog from India can be seen from space. It is that bad. But I got into Delhi. I spent the night, did a little bit of shopping. The next day, I flew to Dehradun and showed up at the airport there. And Dehradun is a city right up against the foothills of the Himalayas. If you picture India kind of like this, Dehradun is right up in here. We were in the hills, 70 miles away was the Tibetan-Chinese border. If we had gone 20 kilometers up to another village, Mansuri, we would have been able to see the high peaks of the Himalayas, but the weather turned bad. We weren't able to go that day. But I got there, I came out of the airport, I was looking around for my friends, and these two little kids showed up. And it took me a moment to realize who they were. These were Pastor Pastor Anand's children. Sweetest smiles, neatest kids, really are. So they showed up and grabbed my luggage, and off we went to the seminary. And the only drawback to coming to North India, especially Dehradun up at the edge of the Himalayas, is that the temperatures were in the 40s and 50s the whole time, both inside and out. They don't know anything about heating in the buildings. And so in my room, that meant spending time swathed in blankets while I was doing my studying and working on my notes. We wore coats everywhere, coats in the dining rooms, coats in the restaurants, coats teaching, all of that. This is in the, there's one of my student couples. That was Peter and his wife, and the fattest-cheeked little baby I've ever seen. I mean, those things were like grapefruits. You know, his little mouth was sort of lost in the middle of them. But neat couple. But this is taken in the classroom, you know. So we're just trying to keep warm in there. There we go. So, yeah. She was a little cutie, though. If you tickled her, she would smile. But that was fun. She was born just before my September trip, and so I saw both of them when I was there in May, didn't see them in September, and then saw them when I got back here recently. And these are some of my other students outside. I had a reduced student population this time because of illnesses and deaths of the family and whatnot, but neat people. And I've committed to going back every February to India, but I told the president after I made the commitment, I said, I should never have told you I'm from Alaska. So being committed to February can be kind of a interesting thing. Anyway, next time I'll come better prepared. This was one of our visits. This was Shivmani and Komal's home. He's still building it, and so it's no windows. They had a door attached, but they left the door open because it was as cold inside as it was out. But neat, neat family. All Christians. Really enjoyed an evening over there, sharing from the Word. Everywhere I went, I was asked to share something. This is another picture of them. And this is, that's me, white guy. And here's the president of the seminary, some of my students. Komal's a student, and her husband. This is the kitchen back there. This is bedroom, living room. You know, their homes are not generally like our homes. And I had to take these two pictures. This was the ladies back there preparing our food in the kitchen. And she came over and was standing by me at one point, and I just had to get her smile. I just loved looking up at her, and I took her picture, and then I showed it to her, and she said, thank you. So, really, really neat. Let's see, where am I? Okay, my teaching went excellent this time. Here's a panorama of the classroom. We teach on the campus of a Christian life center that is there, but it rents to all kinds of people, and there was a Hindu group there at the same time we were there. And it had all the usual complications of working through an interpreter, and I taught, of course, 1 Corinthians and Revelation. My teaching notes were heavily application-oriented, and it was a learning experience for me, especially when we got to talking about Paul's instructions on eating food that's been sacrificed to an idol. I was giving the Western interpretation. Then I found out the Indian interpretation, and things were a whole lot different. So it was something. I'll talk more about Hindu gods at the end. Now, there were always little adventures awaiting at every corner. Even though I've been to the seminary three times now, there's always things that are somewhat new. And after lunch one day, I was taking my almost empty food plate, just with a few things I didn't like, and I walked over to the dish window into the kitchen, and I scraped it off my stuff into the bucket, and I looked down, and there was something down there eating it. There was a rat in the food bucket. So I took that picture and I showed it to the kitchen staff, and they said, yeah. The rat was still there when I left, so it was probably on the menu the next meal. I don't know. Anyway, and these ladies were doing... this little lady is not 5 foot tall. She's 4-something. I don't know what it was. Hard worker, and that's her broom right there. You bend over and you sweep. They don't seem to know about a long-handled broom and problems with your back. But she was the sweetest little old lady, and she would clean our rooms and just always bustling around everywhere. This woman was brushing leaves. You notice her broom there. So she was raking all the leaves to get together to burn them. Life is brutal over there for these women. They do a lot of the work. After quiz times in the afternoons, I would teach in the morning, 2-hour teaching period, but generally... 1 hour of teaching because I had to teach through a translator into Hindi. I would, in the afternoon, we had quiz time, and after quiz time, I would get in the habit of walking down the hill into the little village there. We were on the outskirts of Dehradun in the Rajpur village area, and I would walk down for a cup of chai at my favorite Christian cafe down there and do a little bit of shopping. And there were monkeys, and there were cows, and there were dogs, and there were school kids, and old ladies, and Tibetans, and Hindus, and Muslims, and all of that inhabiting that area. You never knew quite what to expect. Once there were two monkeys on a little low roof right over me, and they snarled at me, so I decided to keep on walking. I didn't want to be their friend. But just some street scenes from there. This is going inside the Christian cafe, and they have the indoor, and then they have an outdoor veranda as well. And I really enjoyed it, and that's looking up into the foothills, the Himalayas, right here. So we were up at a fairly high altitude, as it was right there. It was interesting. After a few times, I walked in one day, and I walked up the counter, and the gal smiled at me. She said, "You want double chai, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, I do." So I was getting well known in the area. Some more street scenes. These are Tibet. When Tibet was overrun by the Chinese, essentially the Tibetan government moved to Dehradun. It's a government in exile, and where we were up the compound is heavily Tibetan. So here's a Muslim lady shopping over here. Here are two Tibetan Buddhist monks, and they just walked by a Hindu temple. There is, the pork shop. I was walking down past the pork shop one day, and there was a herd of pigs running across the street down below me. And I thought, the great escape, they'd done it. So, and there were the chickens who were clucking and didn't know that they're the most popular in the word in the world for a reason. So they didn't last the day. This is a Hindu temple that's tucked away along the street. This was a Muslim funeral. I was walking up the street, and I saw them coming down and knew immediately what it was. And so I waited until it passed. And it was just the saddest moment. I thought, there goes a man who's in hell. And they're carting his body down to the cemetery. And this is the mosque that they would have come from, just up the hill from me. Let's see if I'm still on. Let's see. Yeah, these were two little old ladies sitting there. Look at the vintage of the sewing machine. Yeah. Sitting out there alongside the street, and I think she caught a glimpse that I was taking a picture of them. I was trying to be discreet about it, but she's got her eye on me. So, and, lunchtime. There's a dog, one of the ever-present dogs, and he's face down in the dumpster. So, and that's the narrow little street I would walk down. And there was a lady just out in the traffic, and she's knitting. Got a chair there for a friend to wander by and sit down and yak with her. So life is very much lived out in the open there. This is one of the lavish homes on the way down. And then this is what you encounter right next to them. And that is India. Everywhere you go, north, south, east, and west, and center, those are street scenes in India. And okay, I'll get to this in just a minute. So I'm going to back you up. There we go. As for shopping, a 1-liter bottle of drinking water was 220 rupees. That comes to about 25 cents. And sugar, a half pound or half kilo, about 1 pound of sugar is 32 cents. So very, very cheap. Salt is expensive because they like salt over there more than sugar. So my one Sunday in church there was the 10th. That was 2 weeks ago. The Lord directed me to Psalm 23 and just really filled me full of illustrations and applications as I taught that to the people. And I can only give credit to the Lord for the ministry that I had there. But afterwards, I had the opportunity to see one more bit of the reality of India. And we all went outside. This is out back behind the church. And we were sitting around on chairs waiting for lunch. And the ladies formed several groups. And we men eventually built a fire back to back and circled around it. Notice these two women right here. Those are untouchables. Those are the Dalits. That's a woman and her daughter. Daughter's probably about 10, 12. I really couldn't tell. But here they were all Christians, and yet they were being completely ignored. When the food was served, they were the very last to be fed. And I'm sure in India, when you buy a chicken in the market, they chop the whole thing up for you, bones and all. So the choicest pieces have no bones or little bones. I'm sure they got the bones at the end. That was it. And all the rest of everybody sitting around having a good time. The daughter was talking to her mother and occasionally make her laugh. The daughter was very cheerful. Every time I looked over at her, she would smile back at me. Very pretty little girl. But I sat there and I thought about them still locked into this caste system that degrades people. And they've lived in it all their lives. And sadly, that's the normal way things are in India. I was talking with the president right there. I was sitting next to him and I asked him about him. He said, yes, they're Dalits. He said, these people don't even realize what they're doing. That's just been their way of life all their lives. And so the outcasts are the outcasts. You know, you ignore them. You don't pay much attention. And as people were starting to leave, I went over and I knelt down in front of them and I tried to talk to them in English a little bit, and the girl was smiling at me and whatnot. Obviously, they didn't understand anything. And then I put my hands on the shoulders and I prayed for them. And I wanted them to know they are not untouchable, which they are. And then after that, we all left. But and there's another picture of them. Oh, just a second. There's another picture right there. And see, they're just kind of right by themselves. And all the other ladies were over there.
Are they considered untouchable because of economic reasons? Is it because they're of poor status?
A Dalit or an untouchable, the old name used to be outcast, literally because they were out of the caste system. They were beneath the bottom rung of the caste system. And that meant that a higher caste could not eat food prepared by a Dalit. You did not drink water from the same source that Adalid is drinking water from. You know, there it gets so extreme as to Dalits were not allowed to wear the same clothing that everybody else had. I was reading an account here not long ago, back in the 1930s, there was even a big push on to try and allow the Dalits to be able to walk on the same road that other people walked on.
So there, for the sake of the kids, for the sake of the youngsters in here.
Yeah, these are the despised.
Good explanation. They're despised because of their economic, because they're just lower class people.
Well, it's not just that, too. They're very definitely lower class, but a lot of times their color will give them away as well. It is getting better for the Dalits. There has even been a Dalit prime minister now. In the cities, the distinctions are starting to blur between the castes. The caste system is technically illegal, but it's been in place for 3,000 years. You'll never break it. And so for them, life at the bottom is used to being ignored, period. That's how you're treated there. There's many, many more restrictions, but some people can get away by pretending they're not Dalits, but their mannerisms, maybe their looks, their accents, those things will give them away. And so back they are. And one thing I mentioned in Sunday school class is if a Dalit or anybody in the lower caste of the caste system who is receiving government benefits, and that's not universal in India, but if they're receiving government benefits and they change and register as a Christian, they lose all benefits, which means anything they might be getting in the way of what we would call food stamps or subsidy for anything goes away. And so there are Christians having to make that hard choice now. Do I stay registered as a Hindu, or do I stand up for my faith? And I'm not going to condemn those who keep the registry as a Hindu in order to feed their families. So that's between them and God. But that's some of the brutality of life. Now, the longer I'm in India and with my students, the more I'm learning. And as I mentioned earlier, the prosperity gospel, you know, God means for you to be rich, just give more money to your pastor and it will happen, is widespread in India, and it's a huge influence there. This is Jody and Komal, both of them married ladies. Jody is my favorite student. She is always laughing. I tell her it's her spiritual gift. She comes from a family that laughs loud and long, from what I understand. Her family is all Hindu. Her husband is an accountant, and their little girl is 3.5 years old. All three of her daughters were born by C-section, and she still suffers recurrent terrible pain because of the C-sections. Her first two daughters both died within the first week of life. When one of the daughters was dying, a young Pentecostal, and I have lots of friends who are Pentecostals, but I have to single this out. Young Pentecostal faith healer came to them, prayed over the baby, and when the baby died, the man told blank Jody, J-Y-O-T-I, that it was because she didn't have enough faith. And this was told to me as we were sitting in class, and she always sits over to the left of me up front. And I said, I'm glad I was not there, because I would have had a very strong urge to punch the man in the face. I was angry over it. And I told a story from my own ministry past. We had a phenomenal situation in my last church in Alaska, where this family was so convinced that their dying child was going to be healed in an instant that when he finally died, they spent like 6 hours trying to raise him from the dead before they finally gave up and called the ambulance. Those people had faith like I have never seen before. I talked to the father afterwards, and he said, I had no idea it would end like this. They had no concept that their son was going to die. And I told that in class, and I looked at Jody and I said, don't you ever believe that you didn't have enough faith, and that's why God took your child home. Fortunately, she and her husband have survived it, done just fine. Their faith is alive and well. But that hurt. So anyway, Jamasiki, she has a 3-year-old daughter now, doing wonderfully. India, anybody here been to India at all? India will enchant you. It will thrill you. It will perplex you. It will frustrate you over and over and over again as you try and figure out why did they do that, or why did they do that one way or another. You will fall in love with it, and it will break your heart over and over and over and over again. that is India. As I've been in Southeast Asia, I've been a lot of the Pacific, much of Europe. I've never seen anything like India before. Nothing prepared me for it. And that's why, because of the desperate needs there, that's why, especially in Christian education and outreach, that's why I'm going to continue to keep going back to India. I have a commitment with the seminary. I will be going back every year to teach over there for a couple of weeks, for as long as the Lord allows me to go. Now, you may remember, I think, just before my May trip, I was here, and Pastor Dan asked me what verse sent me to India, and I couldn't think of anything at all on the spur of the moment. And I thought, well, every verse in the Bible in the New Testament talks about teaching and being faithful and carrying on like that. But if there's a verse that really compels me to teach and minister to others, odd though the verse may sound, it's Deuteronomy chapter 32, verses 2 and 3. Let my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, as the droplets on the fresh grass, and as the showers on the herb. For I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. And that, no matter what it is I'm doing, whatever it is I'm teaching over there, this is my prayer. This is what I want. I want to honor the Lord in it. And so, speaking of teaching, I had a coffee pot in my room at the seminary. I was the only one with a coffee pot. It was a 12-cup coffee pot. And so everybody kept coming over to my room wanting a cup of black coffee. They call it black whether it has sugar in it or not. So I decided I would take the coffee pot with me in the morning to class, and we would have coffee there, and they loved it. The president supplied the coffee grounds. I bought the sugar. We had to drink our coffee black one morning because a door in the classroom was left open the previous afternoon, and a monkey stole and ate our sugar. There was almost a pound of sugar in the bag, and I told the class to be on the lookout for a smiling monkey. He will be smiling because he is so sweet. This is not the monkey, by the way. This is a different monkey in a different location down in South India, a different year, but I didn't have any smiling monkeys in my recent pictures. But the monkeys were everywhere, and I will never get tired of watching monkeys. I mean, you'll look out over by the classroom, and a whole tree will be shaking and everywhere. And you can't see a thing in there, but monkeys are leaping limb to limb. Little ones are yanking each other's tails. They're playing leapfrog. They're swinging to and fro, having a blast. They are a riot, but you don't want to get near to them because they will attack. And so the groundskeeper carries a stick, and we've heaved rocks at a few of them. Test time in my classes at Pacific Bible College is quiet. My students are working on their quizzes, and then they turn them in, and I grade them later on. At North India Baptist Seminary, it is very lively. Each question is on the screen in English, and then it has to be translated into Hindi by whoever's my translator that day, and there's no end to confusion about what is being asked. No matter how simply I phrase the questions, they are questioning every nuance of it and debating it. When completed quizzes are brought to the desk, every answer is vigorously explained and defended to the nth degree, and they compare notes with each other to see how somebody else answered it so I can find some minutia in there to convince me that they actually had the right answer for it. And, you know, there are all sorts of anguished expressions and sobs and all this and that and hilarious laughing at the same time going on. And they're all firing in machine gun Hindi as fast as they can all at once. It is worth the price of a ticket to be there at test time with my students. It is a riot being with them. And I can't finish this report without sharing one of the high points for you. Okay. I'm almost done. Be with me. For 2 weeks, we shared the campus with a Hindu study group, and I didn't know at first who they were. Men and women were there, and they were meeting and having work sessions in different rooms. And I'd gone shopping one day, one afternoon, and I came back, and I was sitting outside. It's 50 degrees, but I was wearing a short-sleeved shirt. I was hot from walking back up the hill. And seven of the men walked by and stopped right in front of me and started asking me questions. Number one, what am I doing out here in a short-sleeved shirt? And the first thing that came to mind, the only thing I could think of was, well, I'm from Alaska. And that got them started because they had read about Alaska. Turned out these were school teachers, educators, who were there doing conferences on second post-secondary education and techniques. And we got to talking. I replied I was a Christian to an answer to their question. And then they asked me, okay, well, how? What kind of Christian are you? Are you Protestant? Are you Catholic? I'm Protestant. What's the difference? I explained that ours is a relationship in Jesus Christ by grace alone, through faith alone, in the Lord Jesus Christ alone. That Catholicism was faith plus works, and just basically a religion of rituals. And I asked them, are you all Hindus? And they said, yes. And then one of them made the pious comment, well, all God seek after all. Religions seek after God. And I said, well, the difference between Christianity and your religions is that all the other religions of the earth go looking, trying to find forgiveness or favor with God. Christianity, God reached down to man to grant forgiveness. Had a wonderful opportunity to share the gospel with them. They thanked me. We shook hands afterwards. They walked away, and I just sat there stunned. Because there is an anti-conversion law in Uttarakhand state. It is against the law to share the gospel or to share your faith, if you're a Muslim or anybody else, with somebody else, unless they ask you. And I had just been asked by 7 Hindu men to share my gospel, my faith with them. Wow. So again, someday they're going to stand before the Lord, and I pray that some of them will come to know the Lord before that time. It was just phenomenal. And there's a whole lot more I could say, but let me wrap it up. I do need to share a few verses of Scripture here a little bit. Isaiah in chapter 44, verses 12 to 19. Let me just read this. It just explains the absurdity. I looked at these 7 men. I thought about it. Here are 7 men who are as educated as anybody on earth, who have all the knowledge of the world at their fingertips, and they're bowing down and worshiping idols. Really, really are. And so I got to thinking about that later, and I've reading from Isaiah chapter 44, verse 12, he says, the man shapes iron into a cutting tool and does his work over the coals, fashioning it with hammers and working it with a strong arm. He also gets hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water and becomes weary. Another shapes wood. He extends a measuring line. He outlines it with red chalk. He works it with planes and outlines it with a compass and makes it like the form of a man, like the beauty of man, so that it may sit in a house. Surely he cuts cedars for himself and takes a cypress or an oak and raises it for himself among the trees of the forest. He plants a fir and the rain makes it grow. And when it becomes something for man to burn, then it becomes something for man to burn. So he takes one of them and warms himself and also makes a fire to bake bread. He also makes gods and makes a god and worships it. He falls down, makes it into a graven image and falls down before it. Half of it he burns in the fire. Over this half he eats meat. His he roasts a roast and is satisfied. He also warms himself and says, aha, I am warm. I have seen the fire. But the rest of it he makes into a god. His graven image, he falls down before it and worships. He also prays to it and says, deliver me, for thou art my God. And verse, 20, he feeds. No one recalls, nor is there knowledge or understanding. I have burned half of it in the fire. I also have baked bread over its cold. I roast meat and eat it. Then I make the rest of it into an abomination. I fall down before a block of wood. And he feeds on ashes. And I thought to myself, these people are falling down before blocks of wood and blocks of stone. That's a typical Hindu temple with all the carvings on it. That was Ganesha, the elephant god. This was a little shrine beside along a street, and a boy was sloshing water to clean it off. This is, encountered that in a gift shop at an airport. And where is that next one? This I found in a little temple when we were visiting the top of a mountain down in Kerala State back in 2016. And let's see. That was just one of the posters that are all over the place with one of their gods. And there are some of the gods you can buy. The owls over on the left are interesting. Everything else is some kind of a god there. But these are Buddha down below and Hindu gods up there. Interesting concession. This was in the airport, Indira Gandhi International Airport. And I look at all of that and I'm just astonished. And yet the truth has been established forever and ever. I am the Lord, and there is no other. Besides me, there is no God. I will gird you, though you have not known me, that men may know from the rising to the setting of the sun that there is no one besides me. I am the Lord, and there is no other.
the one forming light and creating darkness, causing well-being and creating calamity. I am the Lord who does all of these things. The truth is, India is still 80% Hindu. Most of the rest is Muslim or Buddhist or Sikh or Jain or some of the other religions, very small. And that's India in a nutshell. And this is why I keep going back to India, to encourage those who are believers and that I might teach men and women in the ministry so that they might better be able to equip others to be Christ's witness in a very, very dark and deadly land. So, Dhanyavad. Thank you.